I work in community mental health settings, primarily rural and semi-rural settings, and I consider myself a field researcher. Susan and I spend a lot of time out at community mental health centers collecting data from staff and clients. And this is a little bit different piece for us in the sense that we took a look at some policy and some financing issues that were really affecting community mental health centers. You can see the rest of it. There is no disclosures here. There was no funding involved with this. It was a pretty straightforward paper. Since about the mid-50s, and I'm going to go through a little history here. Does everybody know, maybe I can fly through these slides. Does everybody know the history of community mental health centers? A lot of places I go, people don't. So am I going to be, yes. You do? Does everybody feel comfortable with this? We'll fly through that a little bit. I mean, John F. Kennedy really was instrumental in sort of maybe changing the way we were going to do business. And this is really on the heels of what, you know, almost 15 years of talk about moving out of hospitals and into a setting, in a community-based settings. And really, community mental health centers were going to be a part of a bold new approach to mental health. And, you know, right now, about one in five adults, right, have some kind of experience with mental illness over their lifetime, and only about a third of them really get some help at the end of the day. So it's a small number. We're missing a lot of people, is sort of the concern. And healthcare reform and parity really wanted to, in some ways, right, try to fill that gap a little. And there was some perception that a lot of that gap was around finances and the way people are insured. And so they really are, you know, in an indirect way, really trying to fill this gap and take us out to maybe more than one third. There's right now we perceive, because of financing problems at the state and now trickling into Medicaid, which I won't talk about today, that there may not be places to receive services for if you have an SMI in rural settings. That in fact that we're starting to see community mental health centers close down, not take new clients, and we'll get more specific about it. But this is on top of the fact that already in rural locations, about 85% of the rural of what's considered a place where there is not enough mental health professionals. They're about 85% of them are located in rural settings. So it's already a problem out there, and this is just compounding it. So again, the Joint Commission in 61 puts this in place. We see the 63 and the 65 funding, right? you know, what they look like on the ground at that time is I consider the sister policy as the community health centers. And both of these were really put in place to serve a catchment area, and anybody that could come into anybody that met the requirements around diagnosis in the case of community mental health centers could come in the door. Okay, but you know, starting in 81 under Reagan, when it was block grant, there was some attempt to sort of redirect community mental health centers and bring them back into the world of healthcare, where financing was more focused on individual clients and follow the client rather than going directly to the center and then serving a catchment area. And this has been a mixed sort of bag for them. You know, they still do the catchment area stuff, and a lot of that is in state funding. But, you know, they've also made a strong change. About 70% of funding for community mental health centers comes from Medicaid, Medicare, where their clients are connected to that funding stream for services. By 1981, sort of the last year you could apply for federal funding for these things, there were about 754 catchment areas, so about half of them had community mental health centers put into place. And, you know, there was still a little bit of growth after that. I think the best estimates are about 800 of them are around the nation. And typically, they do not, and when I say this, you know, so they don't really call themselves community mental health centers anymore. You'll see some people lay claim that name, but they're off of, my local one in Champaign, Illinois is called Elements. And so they've all chosen different names. There's one in our sample that's the H group. So they're all because of the split after 81. They're really all private nonprofits at this stage. A lot of the sort of focus on community mental health between 81 and 2000, you know, 2010 has been on sort of building on the Medicaid changes in 72. You know, in many ways, how do we get more clients into a funding stream that's essentially coming out of Medicaid, Medicare, that is attached to the client? As I said, they sort of continued to operate despite this under catchment area. As you can imagine, most of these places are used to a long history of whoever comes in the door, we're willing to serve them. Okay, it is generally underestimated how important community mental health centers. My perception is, I don't know, does anybody work in community mental health here? You know, what's your perception? Have you guys dropped off the face of the earth? Or, I mean, there's just not a lot of neither positive nor negative about community mental health. What do you think?
I live in Louisiana. They're moving 900,000 people into managed Medicaid in the next few months, so I think it will probably be around for another year, and then it will be completely gone.
Right, it will go to. This is when Louisiana will come up in this. Yeah, it's miserable, right? So, I mean, right now what's happened is community mental health centers have dropped off sort of the face of the earth a little bit, and it's not totally appreciated that essentially community mental health centers are the only people that provide things like supported housing, case management services, ACT, supported employment, you know, some of which, certainly supported housing and supported employment and ACT, are all very strong evidence-based approaches to mental illness. Now, the community health center, unless they're really ambitious, and the local hospital are not likely to wake up and find themselves doing supported employment in the near future. And that's one of the issues that's at hand here. There is evidence, there's good evidence, that the community mental health centers, and I call them community mental health agencies because they stopped using the center name, community mental health agencies do provide pretty cost-effective and impactful kinds of interventions with clients with serious mental illness. And really, about 85% of clients in the community settings today at community mental health agencies have a serious mental illness. You know, they really have, that's where they focused. Now, there is just a dismal state of, there's no other way to put this, that you know, give you a baseline, 2008, things were sort of fine, surprisingly, and at a state level, so these are not community mental health agencies, but the state mental health agencies that hand out funding to the community mental health centers, you can see that the breakdown was about 40% Medicaid and 40% from general revenue funds and 46% from Medicaid. So state funds are a huge player here. And historically, if you think about all the way back to Dorothy Dix, anybody remember Dorothy Dix in the mid-1800s? You know, so she really was instrumental in putting in place the hospital system. Well, her big success, she wanted the federal government to be involved. And she only got as far as counties and states. And starting then, about the mid-1800s, really states had a pretty strong involvement in providing mental health services to people as a result, as well as counties. And you can see the other 14% Medicare, small grants, county funds. By 2009, and we all know what the economic situation is, right? By 2009, things are now out of control. And between 2009 and 2011, more than $2 billion have been sliced out of state budgets across the nation, $2 billion. It's an astronomical sum of money to lose out of community mental health, which has been at stasis for the last 30 years. They haven't been losing money, but they also haven't grown. Okay, it would be like if you never got a cost of living over the last 30 years, and then you lost all your money in the stock market. So, and to just give you some examples, Arizona, and you know, and it will give you some perception of how that $2 billion plays out. So Arizona in 2010 cut $36 million, and that represented 37% decrease in behavioral health services for people who are don't have any other funding source, right? Mississippi, 8% every year, and they're looking for more. California, $92 million out of their budget, which was an astronomical amount of money. New York, $151 million. And Ohio has discontinued entirely services for people who are, yes?
I think clarification on the California, that was Mental Health Services Act money, funding 1% for folks over $1 million, and it had remained unused and unspent, unallocated.
It did. But I don't know if that's the same money that was cut here. This was out of state general revenue funds, was that $92 million. And they may have replaced it with that money, but at the end of the day, the state said out of their general revenue funds that they're not going to continue to spend that money, which, again, is an integral part of the services there. That 1% is very cool. Somebody presented on that yesterday. In Illinois, it's no different. So in 2011, our governor rolled out a $90 million cut to community mental health services. And this is a 39% decrease since the 2008 level, all right? And over the last 3 years, that represents a 56% cut to community mental health centers and state general revenue funds. And really, they account for almost about 30% of these guys' budgets. So anybody that's homeless in their community, anybody that doesn't have health insurance, is not Medicaid eligible or Medicare eligible, state general revenue funds pay for those services.
So you're talking about, in these instances, you're talking about the non-Medicaid
budgets. Yes, yes. This is just the state budget. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's just the state general revenue funds, which are, again, vary from state to state, but they tend to be an integral part of these guys. It's almost 30% of their funding. So, like at the university, you know, I think our state funds represent something like 5%, and we're sweating bullets over the fact that they haven't paid us over the last 2 years. So, when you're looking at a 50% cut to your 30%, that's that base money from the state. This is a big deal, and it has. So we called. You know, Susan and I do lots of work in Southern Illinois, and I was there the day that the state came down to announce this $90 million cut, and it was like pandemonium amongst the executive directors. I've never seen anything like it. They were meeting in a room with big windows, and I was on the outside, and you couldn't hear them, but they were all yelling. By the time I got in there to do my presentation, nobody wanted to hear anything. Story of my life is showing up at the wrong time. You know, I never want to talk to somebody about doing research after they've heard $90 million worth of cuts. So we called around afterwards. I called all these people. I was like, well, what do you think? And, you know, these guys, in rural settings, these guys are, you know, they've been around for 20 years, 20, 30 years. A lot of them are old school mental health people. They've been running these centers for around. We do this work in Region 5, which is the southernmost part of the state. It's about Carbondale down. And it represents a huge part, about 15%. Very depressed agricultural setting. At the end of the day, what ends up happening is that they had to cut people that weren't Medicaid eligible right out. And these are a lot of people in these communities that are working poor. They neither have insurance nor, because they're working poor or single, can access Medicaid. And really, at the end of the day, this was about 10 to 35%, depending on where people were at and responding to this. Everybody is now in that boat. If you're in rural Illinois and you're uninsured, you get 2 hours of assessment and as much crisis service as you can need. So the hospital will take you in, the local hospital, the emergency room, and they can bill. When we ask them, what does this mean, sort of as they look out, 100% of the directors decided not to accept new patients. So they're done. All right, 55% have reduced services to their current patients. 91% plan to reduce services in the future. 87% have instituted hiring freezes. 46% laid off staff, and 73% used the agency's reserve funds. And 28%, these numbers have gone up. I just talked to these guys last week. More and more of them are borrowing against their future payments from the state. And it's brutal. So the state doesn't pay enough to begin with anyways. Then you have to go out and borrow money from somebody else and pay a percentage interest on that borrowing, which then cuts into your state funds. Is this, talking to 12 executive directors in Illinois and rural Illinois, is this, you know, it's not a huge meaningful sample, but, you know, have others seen this? Yes. Unfortunately, if you look at these numbers, they look exactly the same. 53% of state mental health agencies are reducing funds to community providers. You know, there really is a lot. The bottom statement is probably the most troubling, is during this time of great cuts, what ends up happening is that states are finding there's a 56% increase in we need community mental health services. Very troubling. There's a lot of flaws, but we're going to see some growth here as a result of both health care reform and parity. I think that they are going to fill some of the gaps. And really, the first part is really sort of the idea, right, of not having a pre-existing condition affecting your way to get access to insurance. And this was supposed to be the first big bump, and as you can tell, there's been very low enrollment. They predicted about almost 400,000 people would be enrolled in these low-cost, sort of high-risk pools, and right now, there are back in March, there was 18,000. They're not very low-cost, and for rural communities and the working poor, they don't fit very well. You know, if they get a little bit better and they get a little better price, they might work better. The second bump that will probably real work is this. When Medicaid goes to 133% of the poverty line and there's no longer any child requirements, it's unlinked from having a child, you're going to see a lot of people that are serving in these communities become Medicaid eligible, and the states will do that. Unfortunately, now Medicaid is cutting their reimbursement rates to them, so it may be a wash in terms of everything. There's also, you know, I have the paper here. If people would like the paper, it actually came out this week in Psych Services. I've got a copy of it. They asked me, you know, what about the community health centers? Will they be able to fill in? They got a lot of money out of this. They got $9.5 billion. Doesn't seem like it. They're going to lose money. 2010, there was a $600 million rescission. You know, what's going to end up happening is community health centers, right? Mental health is something that's not core to who they are. And so as they start to get retraction and loss of money, you'll see them come back. They'll pull back from mental health services. And certainly, it's a rare instance. There's a couple of community health centers that I work with that actually do provide supportive employment and stuff like that. But we got down 1 minute here. But they're rare. I mean, most community health centers are not going to wake up and decide to do supported employment and supported housing and ACT. So that seems unusual. The other one is workforce, and there may be some impact there, but you're talking less than $100 million worth of workforce stuff to try to fill a gap that represents more than $2.2 billion in community mental health. And none of it's really directed other than the $35 million that's going to go to social work programs and psychology for training. A lot of it's not directed at behavioral health services at all. We're really going to see the bottom one is the last. We're going to see a resulting divergence of supply and demand. As more people become Medicaid eligible, we're going to see them show up at centers, and the centers, by the time they become Medicaid eligible in 2014, many of them will close up shop. Louisiana's classic, right? By the time 2014 goes around, there's not going to be anybody to do supportive employment, even though you may be qualified to get it. Incredible. Thank you.
For a second, does anyone have any questions at this point?
Yeah, please.
What's your feeling on ACOs coming on board and the need for the local hospitals to not become the new mental health centers since they're not capable and don't want those folks in the emergency room? Because we're getting a lot of interest from the private hospitals and working with them to be part of their ACO.
You could be part of it. What do you think of that? That seems like...
I think it would be a way for them to save... in the long run, if ACOs really are going to work, these are the people that are going to cost them a lot of money. If we don't provide the mental health services, they'll be coming in through all the emergency services.
Maybe you could just say what ACOs are, so that's right.
Accountable Care Organizations, which is kind of a network of services in a community whereby they're all at risk. And so the rules that have been written is that it shows that, well, it allows for them to make a profit by doing the right thing at the right time. They're more preventive focused, and well, I mean, it looks really good, but like everything else depends on how it's implemented. But the bottom line, there's disincentives for not doing the right thing, and that you actually will pay if people end up coming to the hospital for things that you should have provided for them earlier on in the community, and that's what I like.
Right, which would really, you know, the people that are going to do that well are the community mental health centers, for people with adults with SMI. That's what they do. Oh, I'm sorry.